Long ago, the Arakations ruled the galaxy. Horror and zombie takeout lay in their wake. What's up? Welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further, well, actually, with a lot of further ado,
ready to just skip right into this.
Yeah. First off, I just want to mention my commitment to Sparkle Motion was severely tested tonight. For anybody who's new, I'm a big fan of a Japanese band called Bandmade, all female melodic hard rock band. Their gimmick is that they wear maid. Most of the band wear maid costumes. Great band. They put out
They don't all dress as maids anymore? They don't all stick with the gimmick anymore?
Well, no, Misa, the bass player, just noped out of the maid costume, like, after the first album.
Oh.
Yeah, she's worn a black dress ever since the second album.
Right.
So, but the rest of them still do. Anyway, they put out a concert video this week, concert DVD Blu-ray. My copy shipped from Tokyo on Monday somehow got here to Jersey yesterday. We're recording on Wednesday night. Somehow got from Tokyo to Jersey in a day. I don't know why, how, but it's in quarantine till Friday. Tonight, as a part of some YouTube thing, they're some music week or something, they streamed at least an hour of it on their YouTube channel. About an hour before we were due to record.
Ah, so you'll have to wait.
I watched the first few songs, and then it was the hardest thing I ever had to do to close that tab and get ready to record.
I mean, honestly, if you got like a Clorox wipe or something, well, really, not even. You just open the box.
No, I want to wait. I can't take any chances. I mean, I don't see how it got here in a day from Tokyo. I think the tracking was a little off, but I'll wait till Friday. Fortunately, the fourth song was the one song on the new album I don't really listen to, which is a bit too poppy for my taste, so that made it a little easier to stop it, but they're really great live. Anyway, moving on, we've got some listeners submitted. A couple of tweets from Bodo. First he said, question for y'all. More ridiculous. 86's FX, special effects artist expert brings down the plot, or 81's Blowout, where special sound effects expert brings down the plot. Now, we were having a brief discussion of this before we started recording. You were saying that Blowout sounds better.
I saw Blowout. I was way too young to understand it and haven't seen it since. I mean, we're talking at least more than 35 years since I've seen it.
Right.
The cast, though, aside from Dennehy, of course, in FX, the cast for Blowout looks a bit stronger, considering how weak the supporting cast of FX was.
Right. I haven't seen Blowout. I've obviously seen FX last week. Bodo's question wasn't which movie is better. I'm fully willing to accept that Blowout is the better movie. But as I recall, Blowout stars John Travolta, which inherently makes it, to me, the more ridiculous of the two.
Let me do my Vinnie Barbarino sound effects thing.
So that in and of itself to me would suggest that it is the more ridiculous of the two.
Well, I guess the premise of a sound effects guy taking down a mobster is more ridiculous than a visual effects guy taking
down. From what I read, he was out recording samples for things and he ended up recording like a mob hit or some other like major crime, was put into witness relocation and they went after him.
And honestly, the only ridiculous part of FX, the only ridiculous part of FX wasn't that he was a visual effects guy taking them down. It was that the visual effects guy was somehow a stunt driver, a makeup artist. Like he could do everything except understand when he was completely had.
Right. Anyway, on to some news. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Bodo had a tweet about this week's movie as well. He said, Heavy Metal 2000, was it made for TV? Fade to black, next scene. I was expecting to see the X-Men or the Avengers from the 90s. Boring music, boring story. Gotta love the bad guy had a space armada, then attacks with catapults and arrows. Then the predictable twist. It's a heavy metal movie. You don't watch it for the plot.
I thought the soundtrack was actually one of the stronger points of the movie, actually.
It was fun. I mean, I preferred the soundtrack of the original, personally. That's an age thing, but... Anyway, on to some news in reference to this movie. Thanks to John Phillips for posting this on our Facebook page. This was going to be a tribute episode, but then John made us aware of this. Julie Strain, statuesque star of B-movies, is not dead, film company now says, from The Hollywood Reporter. This was originally posted on January 13th this year. Unfortunately, we didn't get to it sooner. Malibu Bay Films, which reported the death of actress Julie Strain, is now saying the B-movie queen is still alive. Quote, the information we received from a trusted source of the community on the status of Julie Strain was found to be false, unquote. The film company then posted on Instagram, quote, we deeply apologize for needlessly upsetting anyone, as well as ourselves. We've asked THR for retraction as well. Thank you, and God bless Julie and her family. Malibu Films, for whom Strain 57 appeared in several B-movies, earlier wrote on Facebook and Instagram that the actress had died on Sunday, this was back in January, but those posts have been deleted. Arlene Sedaris, who owns Malibu Films, her late husband founded the company, said that she had just spoken with Julie's partner Dave, who had confirmed that she's not dead. An assistant to Sedaris wrote an email.
She said, and I quote, I feel happy.
She's pining for the Fjords, as you said. She's got lovely plumage. Strange condition is not known. So yeah, this was going to be a tribute episode, but now kicking off a animated sci-fi two-parter. It is from 2000, Heavy Metal 2000.
Of course, that brings... If only we had an Abe Vigoda movie to do.
Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by Evil Green Crystals. The Lochnar, by any other name, or no name at all, is still just a MacGuffin.
And also brought to you by sequels, keeping us abreast of a plot that never existed. All right, so we have absolutely nothing to do with the original movie except for that goddamn crystal. Sorry.
Possibly tie it into the Lochnar. It's never named, but...
I think someone said somewhere it was a shard of the Lochnar. And
the Lochnar was never mentioned in the movie. I was keeping an ear out for that.
Okay. I thought I heard. All right. The first act was quite boring, actually. So from what I gather, this person somehow stumbles across this. And it possesses him.
A miner. He's mining on an asteroid, and he digs into it.
And he takes over a ship and goes on a spree to get more of it, to get this juice.
He found out that there is this substance, hydrogen. Oh, it is like H2O plus something. That will make him immortal. Basically, you know, the fountain of youth.
Right. So he goes to this planet to get some of that.
Because some of the that H2O, whatever, seeped into the planet and is in the blood of the people who evolved onto that planet.
So he takes some to farm. He destroys the planet pretty much, except, well, he left someone alive. Mm-hmm. Well, he took a hostage... And then left her sister alive, which, of course, classic movie mistake. You don't leave the surviving relative.
Well, the movie would have been over if he had.
True. Roll the credits. Or onto two other stories, as they did in the original. Well, yeah. Either one. But, so, of course, she goes on a plot for revenge. And, she finds a pilot that, of course, was left behind from this mission as well. And they get a ship together and fly off to chase after him. And they wind up in Mos Eisley Cantina? Or no, Some DS. Oh, that's right. It was Neo Calcutta.
Yeah. It was, no, this was more of a Blade Runner thing. Mos Eisley was in the first movie.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And so finally, they get into this big gunfight in the middle of the bar, pretty much mowing down the majority of the people in attendance of this bar. But of course, he has this he has some power that keeps him going even when he gets shot up. Luckily, he had enough presence to take a drink of the liquid to heal himself. And they of course continue the gunfight. I forget why they couldn't have it out there, to the excuse they had where they had to keep going and split up. But of course she chases him even through like a hyperspace, where they have this probably one of the most boring battle space battles in cinematic history, because it's kind of in slow motion. And they chase him to the final act, which is the because this was like instead of three stories, they just did kind of three acts.
Yeah, it's one story as
It
opposed
is,
to
it is,
vignettes like the first
it
one.
is one story in three acts. You know, the invasion of the planet, the, you know, the chase, and then finally the planet of stone, or whatever you want to call that planet. Some call it hell, some call it home. Anyway,
Some point, Billy Idol shows up as his alien Obi-Wan.
yes, Billy Idol shows up as alien Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he takes the sister under his tutelage, although he winds up interfering in the whole fight. She almost has him finished off, and they chase each other around the planet a little bit, and they finally get to the big final confrontation, where, you know, hilarity ensues.
And this is a heavy metal movie. It's not about the plot. It's not about the performances. It's about the ridiculous, cheesy excess.
It's kind of weird though if you compare the two, because when I the whole time I was watching, I was like, wait a minute, am I remembering the right movie with the original? Because I didn't watch the original before this. Well, I mean, we watched it 11 years ago. We reviewed it, by the way, and we begin that episode with,
And I don't know if I've seen it since.
my God, can you believe it? We've made it to episode 10.
Can't be 11 years because we just hit 10 years in well, last May.
It says July of 09.
Okay. Okay, wait, I thought we oh, no, it was a long okay. It was 2019. So yeah. It's not it's 10 years and change, dude, not 11 years. What's July? Okay, it's close to 11
July of
years.
09. That's
Okay.
a couple months away from that being 11 years ago,
Yeah.
man.
Wow. Actually, no. Shit, we're hitting 11 years next month.
Yeah.
A couple days from now, we hit 11
That's
months.
right. So
Okay.
we were marveling that we made it to episode 10, and I think it was the first time we'd consistently produced episodes
Well,
for a long time.
yeah, because
But
when
anyway,
you moved to Chicago, we had some issues with that with the TAS.
figuring out what we were going to do next. Yeah. So
Anyway.
but the movie, the tones were so different, and it's one thing I remember. Remember, the original had like John Candy and Eugene Levy, and there was a lot of humor in it. Like, I one thing I took from the episode that I completely forgot was that the comedy show Drawn Together, with that animated reality show, they took Captain Hero from that original movie.
Well, yeah, Stern looks a lot like Captain Hero. They based the model on it. But Stern was essentially based on Superman.
Well, sure. But the whole point was, you know, they were taking this the Superman who's kind of weird and flaked out. But there was a lot of humor in it, whereas this was they were trying to do a straight up action movie, with titties, of course.
Of course, because it's heavy metal. I first saw this probably not long after it was released, early thousands, very early thousands. Hated it. And I don't know why. I think I maybe was taking the original a little too seriously and wanted someone kind of, quality replacement from, had a fucking blast with it this time. Although that first act is a bit slow. In the beginning, yeah. I was waiting for the Corvette to show up. I do like that they did connect them at least kind of, you know, subtly with the whole idea of the Lochnar, the Green Crystal. Animation was nicely done. Backgrounds were really detailed. And the cel-shaded characters were a nice contrast with that.
But there were some weird parts of it. Like, Tyler, is he like the woodsman in Beauty and the Beast?
Okay. I don't get the reference.
I mean, his animation, his character's appearance, I think...
Well, once he is infected by the Lochnar, and I'm just going to call it the Lochnar, once he's infected by it, he becomes feral.
Right.
Which also happened in the first movie, in the Tarnas section, when the one guy, you know, that tribe who finds it at the end, in the last vignette... They become kind of animalistic looking.
No, I'm not talking about the animal in Beauty and the Beast. I'm not talking about the beast. I'm talking about the bad guy. Let me Google it. Gaston.
Okay. Well, because of this build?
Just Google image Gaston for Beauty and the Beast.
Well, I'm recording. I don't want to open a browser.
And tell me that that's not Tyler.
Okay, he's top heavy. From what I recall of the pictures I've seen.
I mean, like, the black hair, the black eyebrows, the chin, the face. I mean, they pretty much took that animation.
Yeah. He looks a lot like him, yeah.
The weird body armor on him.
But it was nice to see Michael Ironside, who played Tyler, in a role where he wasn't shouting all the time.
That's true. He had a very Tim Allen vibe with his voice, I thought.
He was a very calm performance, which is unusual for Michael Ironside.
Yeah.
I did like how the interior of the mining ship that he steals was kind of run down. Because it's sci-fi, you know, it's easy to make it all clean and, you know, futuristic looking.
I think we were definitely at the point where it was familiar to see something run down sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, Lucas started that more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, of course. But it was seriously grungy, which was nice.
In fact, isn't this even around the time of Firefly?
A little bit before. Firefly was 2002. I was a bit surprised that the first nude scene wasn't Julie Strand's character. It was her sister.
Well, yeah, that was weird how they did that. The two of them, like, she's getting out of the ship, and then you see the shower, and you're like, wait a minute, why is the hair different here to there? Then, oh...
And they did a great job of communicating Julie's height, which I was reading Julie Strand herself, like, oversaw that, because she's 6'1". And, you know, she wanted to make sure her character looked nice and tall. They did a nice job of communicating that. The planet that they lived on, Eden, definitely reminded me of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because it's this desert planet.
Right. There was a definite Tatooine feel to it.
Mm. Nice gore animation. You see some people get shot like straight through the head at times. You know, body parts getting cut off. Also liked the dog fight over Eden. That was a nice ship fight. Also, the ship with the buzzsaw in the front of it, I loved. I mean, it wasn't actually a buzzsaw. I think it was the engine. But it looked like this big laser buzzsaw in the front of the ship. I will say... Julie Strain's performance wasn't good, but it fit the movie.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't much she could do with this, honestly. Yeah.
And I loved all the alien designs. There's a billion aliens in this movie. They all look different and ridiculous.
It is. Some of them were cool. My favorite probably was the Stone Man.
Yeah. Oh, I loved Zeke. Odin, Idol's character's sidekick. This little guy who's made of stone, who is... just this adorable sidekick. I loved him for the entire movie. I'm glad. Well, he survived.
Honestly, I didn't see Bodo saying the twist was predictable.
You didn't see it coming.
I don't think I really saw that coming. I think, I mean, it made sense.
Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't see it coming. And this is, I mean, the first time I've seen the movie before, it was a long time ago. So I forgot most of the plot. I forgot there was a twist. It didn't shock me when it happened, but I didn't predict it. But like, this is not a movie where I'm sitting there trying to predict what's going to happen.
Exactly. That is probably what it was. I wasn't really thinking there was going to be a twist. So to have a twist, it was kind of like, oh, all right. Mm-hmm. But then they really didn't do much with the twist at the end. There wasn't a very big confrontation. It was just like a, oh yeah, then we lock him in.
They just gave Zeke a chance to be the hero. But I mean, you know, my reactions to this were a great example of expectation management. I went into it the first time with the wrong expectations. You know, I expected it to be legit good. It was not. This time I knew going in, it's going to be ridiculous and cheesy and gory and full of nudity. And I was just in for a movie like that. And I had a great time.
I wasn't expecting to like the soundtrack, actually. I was expecting to be like, oh, you know, like what hacks did they, you know, throw in together? But I mean, you know, they had Pantera, they had System of a Down.
It was a fitting heavy metal soundtrack.
A lot of Bob Ezra, you know, Bob Ezrin produced stuff in there. Voivod, you know,
I mean, it was fine. I didn't really notice it a lot. I was relieved when the heavy metal came in, because it starts orchestral. You know, when we finally get the first loud song, I was relieved.
I mean, I'm looking at the soundtrack of the original, not very metal.
No, but it was, you know, fitting for the time.
I'm seeing Stevie Nicks. Yeah, I'm seeing Journey. Right. I'm seeing Blue Oyster Cult.
Blue Oyster Cult is considered metal.
Really?
Yeah, they're considered metal. And the Stevie Nicks, and who did you say before them? Journey. Those songs were for like love scenes and whatnot.
This is the closest thing. Well, they did have Sabbath in there.
Yeah, so Sabbath, they had Trust. They, you know, there was some metal, some proper metal. Back to the sequel. There was one cheesy moment that I kind of had to like roll my eyes in, not a fun way. When the first time she catches up with Tyler, it's on this kind of rundown city planet, very, very underworld Blade Runner kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Neo-Cal. She finds him in this bar.
Right.
The holographic band had a different relevance today. Like, if we could have that today. So, you know, she throws off this cloak she's wearing. You see these, you know, bandoliers, and she pulls out this Gatling gun. And it's all in slow motion. It was very Rodriguez. But slow motion just isn't cool to me anymore.
No. And especially in a cartoon. I mean, you don't have to make it slow motion. You can actually... But that was...
You can just add frames like Colin did, yeah.
That was a very late 90s, early 2000s thing.
Yeah, true.
You know, when... Think about it. This is around when John Woo was big. And I was like, can he turn the slow motion off of the camera?
It was coming off of John Woo and Rodriguez early stuff. And
yeah,
slow motion was a thing.
Honestly, the fight in the bar is probably my favorite scene in the whole movie, though. It was kind of like, oh, you know, it finally grabbed me in. But of course, it's like more than a half hour into it, though. So by that point, it was kind of like...
Now, you were complaining about the jump scene. Now it was too slow and boring. Yeah. I did think piggybacking off of Tyler's ship with the tractor beam was kind of clever. At that point, they're just sending ships after her because they know she's piggybacking, and they're just getting destroyed by the wake of the hyperspace or whatever it's called. The jump, you know, the hyperspace. So it wasn't really a fight scene.
Yeah, it was just this, they're kind of flying at him, and then, oh no, it was just...
it was just okay, we're gonna destroy another one and another one. I gotta say, Idol's performance was a very pleasant surprise. He's actually a decent voice actor.
I always think of his performance in The Wedding Singer, but
okay, I haven't seen The Wedding Singer. Never seen The Wedding Singer, so.
It's a very brief cameo at the end. He's like a first class passenger on the flight they're on. It's just like a couple minutes, you know, in the film.
But he was good as, you know, the sort of wise old man. Yeah.
Wait, he's got a great voice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not just for singing, but I mean, I am surprised. Actually, has he done more voiceover work? Because I mean,
I have to check, because I wouldn't be surprised if he had, but you know, if he hasn't, I hope he does more.
Yeah, he's got 100 and soundtrack credits. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. He's been a
yeah,
pretty popular musician for
I
like
guess
40
they
years.
would use him for 139 23 acting credits.
Oh, shit. Okay. So he's done a fair amount of acting.
Mostly video shorts, though. And Heavy Metal 2000 was the first thing he did after The Wedding Singer, which was 98.
Okay. I do like how they amped up the creepy River Guardian trope, because they have to cross this river of lava, and
Right.
they're on it. They got a boat, and this alien's this like mucus covered green alien sitting there saying like, "I'm the guardian of the river. You have to give me something to cross." And it says she has to give him a kiss. She just kisses him, and they say, "What are you doing? We're ready to go." It did get a kick out of that.
It was a little like, okay. That it was good. I mean, I think it was one of the few attempts at humor in the movie, actually. It's only like the second really joke that
This is not a
they
funny
pull.
movie.
Right.
Well, it's not an intentionally funny movie. Unintentionally, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I do like that they had Julie do the Tarna swim and pull out the sword and all of that. There was a big nod to the original there.
I was going to say, is that the original outfit from the first one too?
It's not exactly, but it's very similar. I compared them. I do like her armor in quotes. I mean, going into combat naked is not a new thing. There are tribes in, long, long ago who did it, the Celts, for example. But wearing basically a G, when it's basically one of those body, swimsuits that have like that are like all straps. It's one of those deals. Not really effective in combat, except she's got a pauldron on one shoulder and like a bracer with some blades in it, and a big ass sword. That's what she's wearing. It's a heavy metal movie, and I loved how the swords in that battle just cut through bodies like they're jello.
I wonder how much silicone adds to your armor class.
The swords just cut through bodies like they were cutting through jello. That was hilarious. Like they had no bones. The CG when Odin actually showed his true form was hilariously bad. Like, I was a fan of all of the animation in this movie until that moment.
So is he like salacious, a big salacious crumb?
I don't exactly know. He's some sort of raptor thing.
Like it was so brief
I
and
mean, they are. He's one of the species mentioned at the beginning, the Arakacians.
yes.
And I'm guessing they borrowed that name from Arakocra. From D&D, the bird people.
I was thinking of Dune and the
Arrakis.
Arrakis.
Okay.
I think that's what it was.
Okay, Arrakeens, Arrakis. Arrakis is the planet, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
I was thinking, because I watch a ton of D&D, I was thinking Arakocra. So the fact that he was kind of raptorish wasn't a surprise.
In
But
fact,
I
it reminded me a lot of FX where like the actual plot came in like the last 2 minutes of the movie. I was like, wait, what?
With regard to Odin's true form, if you've seen that old Adult Swim show about the angel, kind of like that, but creepy. And I
I thought
love
he was the one of the sidekicks of Space Ghost.
Zork a little bit, yeah, Zorg.
Oh man, I miss that show.
I love that Zeke sacrificed himself to save the galaxy. Because Zeke was the best character in the movie. The little stone guy.
Yeah,
by
he
far
needed
the best
work
character
too.
in the movie. A bit of trivia. It's based on a graphic novel called The Melting Pot, written by Kevin Eastman, Simon Bisley, and Eric Talbot. Kevin Eastman was married to Julie Strain for like 10 years. Maybe 15.
Okay, that would explain why she had the Eastman name in the credits.
Yeah, they split up in 2006, so they were still married when the movie was made. On to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
The film had a video game about the events after Heavy Metal 2000 called Heavy Metal Fact 2, in which the player assumes the role of Julie as she fights to save Aiden from an evil entity called Gith. I'm thinking they also once again ripped off D&D. The Gith in D&D showed up in 81, so The game is set sometime after the film and features cameo appearances of several characters. For example, Julie's sister Carrie, the pilot Jermaine, who she hooks up with after the movie, and a resurrected Tyler. Yeah, spoilers. I actually had the game. It was one of the first PC games that I bought.
Really?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a 2000 video game. So it's in that weird time when everything was kind of realistic, but also really blocky. But it was fun. I've been meaning to watch a playthrough on YouTube because obviously I can't get it again.
Yeah.
After the release of 2000, a third film has been in various stages of development since 2008 and into 2009. Reports circulated that David Fincher and James Cameron would executive produce and each direct one of the 8 to 9 segments in a new film based on heavy metal.
Wow.
Eastman would also direct a segment, as well as animator Tim Miller, with Zack Snyder, Gore Verbinski, and Guillermo del Toro attached to direct segments. However, Paramount Films decided to stop funding on the film by August of 2009, and no distributor or production company has shown interest in a second sequel since. I'm not a Zack Snyder fan, but I would like to see him do a segment in a heavy metal movie. I think it's a perfect match.
If they were to do another heavy metal movie, though, another one.
Well, wait.
Okay.
In 2011, filmmaker Robert Rodriguez, who I referenced earlier, announced at Comic-Con that he had purchased the rights to heavy metal and planned to develop a new animated film at his new Quickdraw Studios. However, on March 11th, 2014, with the formation of his very own television network, El Rey, Rodriguez considered switching gears and bringing it to TV. It's a heavy metal TV movie.
I'm not sure.
That doesn't work. Because everything that makes heavy metal great, you can't do on TV.
You can't do that on television.
Exactly. It would be everything bad about heavy metal, but none of the fun parts.
I mean, it is a little strange, you know, thinking that they did this in 2000. Mm-hmm. It just seems kind of like something in a time that's passed at this point.
Yeah.
And it's really weird that the two don't really match up all that well, the sequel and the original. Like, not even, you know, the fact that it's vignettes, you know,
the Lochnar is really the through line, and, you know, they paid tribute to the original with the swimming and scene and, you know, the whole Tarna thing.
I think I remember from the original, I didn't get to the end of the episode, but I think I remember not liking that they did three different stories and not doing one. Mm-hmm. And now they've done one story, and I'm not sure if that works either. But if they were to do a TV series, would it be different vignettes, you know, that they would come back to here and there? I mean,
that could be interesting. And I'm bashing the idea of TV because I'm thinking network TV.
Yeah, this would be a cable thing probably.
If he puts it on like HBO or something else that Netflix, something else I have access to that I pay for.
You know, HBO did like an adult cartoon. Yeah.
It's a good fit for HBO. I mean, I don't have HBO, which makes me sad for this.
It was something with animals. I can't remember what it was called exactly. It was on after, like...
No, it's not going to HBO because Rodriguez has his own television network, not studio.
Oh.
El Rey. I don't know anything about El Rey.
Me neither.
So, I mean, if he can do whatever he wants on that network, you know, not stick to, you know, FCC guidelines, then I'm totally down for a TV show because... And it begins with an A. What's the fucking word? Anthology. Oh. An anthology approach would be great.
But of course, I mean, he's sticking with animation. I'm wondering if the next step for heavy metal would be to be a live action.
The budget would be ridiculous. And you can get away with the gore and the sex in animation a lot easier than you can get away with it in live action. You'd have a lot more complaints if you did all that shit in live action. And the effects budget would be ridiculous. And it's rooted in a comic book.
True.
You know, I've, you know, in the slew of comic book movies that we've...
I was going to say, comic book movies, man.
Fair. But you're right from a commercial standpoint. Possibly. But from a personal standpoint, with this, you know, onslaught of comic book movies we've had over the last decade plus, I've realized that superheroes, and I think this applies to heavy metal as well, work far better in animation. This doesn't work in live action as well.
Yeah, but I think you're right, though, that this kind of gets a pass because it's animated. Mm-hmm. I think people would lose their shit if they did this.
Definitely.
Real action.
I mean, and that's why, you know, Julie Strain's performance kind of works, because it's animated.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some great voice acting out there. I have a lot of respect for voice actors. There are some voice acting performances in animation that are every bit as good as live action. But you can get away with less in animation. You can get away with a flat performance, and it'll still work if the visuals are good. On to brains.
On to brains.
I had a fucking blast with it because I was looking for exactly what I got. I'm going 4.5.
Wow. So the original, you gave 4.
Uh-huh.
And I gave 2.
Uh-huh.
And you've given this one 4.5. I'm giving this one 2.5.
Okay. Well, we're consistent.
We both like this better than the original.
Slightly more than the original, yeah.
I mean, it's a solid soundtrack. There's some good scenes in it. They at least attempted a single plot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is a better movie. I mean, I think if they had maybe stuck with the tone at least, you know, got some comedic actors in here and did some shtick,
mm-hmm.
I think it might have been a little better, but I guess this point of like a genocidal maniac.
I went in for ridiculous cheese and gore. I got ridiculous and nudity. I got ridiculous cheese, gore, and nudity. I was happy.
At least so, bring Eugene Levy back.
Yeah, he would have been an improvement.
Yeah.
Actually, he should have been fucking Zeke.
Yeah.
Should have been playing Zeke, just to clarify what I mean there. what have we learned?
We learned that if you're going to have a catchphrase, like if you try to kill someone, you should make sure they're dead. You should practice it yourself.
And I learned that a space vampire is still a vampire. Tyler was basically a vampire.
And that was the most aggressive I've ever heard someone say the name Tyler, wasn't it?
Probably.
Isn't that like a George Carlin bit of like Connor and Tyler? I gave you a chuckle. Tyler!
Alright, so until next time, we'll be continuing this. This is a sci-fi animation two-parter with Titan AE. I remember loving that one back in the day. I think my opinion is going to be the opposite of Heavy Metal 2000, where I hated it originally, now I love it. I think I'm going to go the other way with Titan AE. I loved it back in the day, but we'll see. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life. There you are.
There you are.